At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
I did a quick calculation today as I was preparing for today's show, and we have owned almost 1,000 different animals. Not different kinds, obviously, although it's getting to that point with the addition of camels to our homestead. But over the years of homesteading, almost a decade of homesteading, we have owned almost 1,000 different animals. Hundreds and hundreds of chickens. We've had about 50 pigs. We raised pigs for meat, so that was something that every year we would get a bunch of different pigs throughout the spring and summer. And then, of course, there was the other fowl. We've had ducks. We've had geese. A whole lot of guineas. Sad to say, every year we'd do a batch of guineas, and then we would lose them, and then we'd get another batch, and then we would lose them. We did meat animals. We have rabbits. This year we got into rabbits, and that quickly went from, like, 2 rabbits to 50 rabbits in no time. And all of the animals that we've spent time working with, cows, sheep, goats, they all have their pros and they all have their cons. I have to be fair. There are wonderful things about every kind of livestock. And then there are some things that are not as wonderful. And of all the animals that we've raised on our homestead, there is only one that I have officially banished from ever coming back to the homestead. And yes, that is goats. I've never known a brighter sunset, but every day I see it rise. As of this last year, I finally decided we will never ever do goats again on the homestead. And not that we didn't give them a fair share. We have had about 25 goats over the years, and I have spent time milking at least 4 or 5 of our does. We've tried different goat milks. We've tried to do the soap. We've tried all kinds of different things. And I'm going to be honest, I love some things about our goats. You will find no more personality in any animal on the homestead, that's for sure. And then, of course, there's goat cheese, which I am a huge fan of goat cheese. I just found that dealing with goats in my everyday life was a little bit too much chaos, and the pros of the goat did not outweigh the cons. And so I decided, you know what, we're not going to do it again. We're done with goats, and specifically the dairy goats, which we tried for years to do. No more. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't have goats on your homestead. Our homesteads are kind of like superhero utility belts. One superhero, picture Batman. Despite being called Batman, he actually can't fly. And so on Batman's utility belt, you'll find a grappling hook. Because the only way Batman is going to get to the top of a building is with that grappling hook. Superman doesn't need the grappling hook. He can just fly to the top. Some of us need goats on our homestead. And some of us just don't know when to take a hint and are going to get them anyway. And for those of you out there who just got to have goats in your life, I get it, I understand. There are people like that in the world. And we're going to talk to a couple of them who are crazy goat owners. They got a place crawling with goats. We're talking to Liz and Aaron from Simon Says Farm. And they're going to tell you all the good reasons why you actually might want to bring goats onto your homestead, despite the fact that I have sworn them off. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how are you?
So I have to say, I was really excited as we were setting up here. This is the first time we've had a live show with livestock in the background. We were getting ready. We were doing our sound check, and Aaron was fixing the microphone, and Liz said something that I thought, man, that could be a bumper sticker. I mentioned something about goat stories. And what did you say, Liz, if you've had goats?
You were talking about, I'm sure you've got some good stories. And I said, anybody who's owned a goat for a day has a good story.
Where is the craziest place you have ever found one of your goats?
Hanging upside down from their jungle gym.
Yeah, by the back leg.
Yep. Yeah. I find one of our teenagers, we call them, their babies from last year. I actually find him in the hay feeder every morning. Yep. And he's now a 90-pound buckling. Well, he's a wether.
He's a wether,
And I find him in the hay feeder every morning. Aptly, his name is Thunder. And boy, does he rumble every morning.
We also have a 6-foot scratching post. I think it was meant for cows, right?
Scratching post. Yeah, horses and cows.
And it's maybe got 6 inches of area on the top of it to sit on.
We'll find if there's a 6x6 post. And we'll find a goat on top of that 6x6 post, which is easily 6 foot up in the air.
Yeah.
Anybody who's owned a goat for a day has a good story.
That, when I heard that, I was like, that could be a bumper sticker, a t-shirt. You guys know, we know from having them, goats bring some chaos into your life. Whatever made you guys get goats in the first place? How'd you get started homesteading? Tell us a little bit about how Simon Says Farm all started.
So Simon Says Farms actually started back when we lived in a different town. And it was all because we had just had, we're young parents. So I had a 3-year-old and a newborn. And we really wanted to get into some fresh eggs and have a source of protein, really, that we would just, you know, it was in the day and age before chickens were really trendy. And so I remember the conversation. He was driving and I was like, are you sitting down?
Yeah.
And
And
he's like, well, yeah, I'm driving. I'm like, well, I want chickens. And it was like, it's the whole, can you hear me now? Because he didn't say anything. We ended up getting chickens about 8 or 9 months later after doing all of our research on what breeds we wanted. And we got a starter flock of about 25, couple roos in the mix. And a couple years later, after eggs were going, the chickens were doing great. Eggs are really yummy. I'm like, I want to say he was 5 or 6.
He was about
our
5.
Oldest was 5 or 6. And he was a huge milk drinker. And I'm like, we always joked that Jake needed his own cow to keep up with his milk consumption. And I was like, well, I can't see myself milking a cow. But I sure do love the personality a goat brings to the property. And we weren't zoned for goats.
Yeah, we were on less than 3 acres. So technically we grew to about 50 chickens illegally, right? So we were all right.
Yeah.
And you know Connecticut, right?
We were illegal
farmers.
Has the statute of limitations passed? Because I don't want you to keep talking in case, you know.
We moved. So we actually moved to close to 10 acres in order to get bigger into the chicken was the gateway into the whole homesteading. Yeah. And then it came, okay, to my wife's point, I don't know if we want to jump from chickens to a cow.
I couldn't have illegal goats. And then the town finds out. And now I have to get rid of the goats because that would kill me.
No, so we did all that official above board. When we moved, we actually asked those questions before we bought this property and 10 acres and converted it into a homestead or farm.
Right.
And that's what we did. Yep.
Yeah, and I thought that was cool that you're in Connecticut. We were there. We knew the oppressiveness of homesteading in Connecticut. Yeah. And we made sure when we were looking for property in Connecticut, it was 10 acres. That was the magic number. Now, every town is different, but a lot of towns, it was like, if you could get 10 acres, you could kind of do what you wanted. And that's a good little side note for anybody watching, wanting to do this life is look before you take that leap, because you might be finding yourself sadly having to rehome goats because you only have 5 acres. Yeah. And you can't possibly own goats on only 5 acres. You need 10. You guys, obviously, you had your son who was guzzling milk. So did you dive right into dairy goats? What was the first breed you brought onto the farm?
So we did a lot of research as to what breed we wanted. And initially, I was going to go with the Nigerian Dwarf, thinking they're smaller, they're easier to handle. They'll give us, you know, a decent amount of milk.
Yep.
I read into the breed and decided that wasn't the breed for us for several reasons. And then we decided to settle with La Mancha's and Alpine's. And then 6 months later, we brought in Toggenburg's. And that's what we have today, is all three breeds.
Why did you guys decide not to go the route of Nigerian Dwarf?
Because they're loud.
Oh, the Nigerian Dwarfs are known. Well, okay, they are loud. All right.
They're loud.
We saw one Nigerian Dwarf at a show that we were showing at a few years into our show career, I guess. And I was like, ooh, we made a good call.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I was like, that goat sounded like the Wicked Witch of the West. It cackled. I'm like, ooh, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
But one of the other reasons on a serious note is that they have a much higher percentage of birthing complications. And I know birthing is difficult with any animal. So I didn't want to get into a breed that has known issues because they've got big heads and really small hips. So they tend to get stuck and have a higher percentage of like C-section needs. And then also you weren't really saving much in the way of graining them and haying them for their milk ratio. So you were putting in almost as much, not, I don't know the exact percentage, but it wasn't a big savings in grain and hay to get just a small fraction of the amount of milk a full-size dairy goat would give. So I was like, if I'm going to put in all that effort, I want the milk return for the family.
You know, we felt the same way. We made the mistake of getting I shouldn't call it a mistake. We had fun with ours. And we actually had a couple that turned out. We had a couple little mutts that were pretty good too. But all in all, looking back, I very rarely, if people are going to do the goat thing, I very rarely suggest they go that route. Unless you have like a particular reason, you just like them, you want a teeny tiny little thing on your property, or you just have. But even the space issue, I mean, it's not like a Toggenburg can't fit in the same amount of space. So it really, you got to just want that breed. I feel like they don't really have any particular, as a homesteader who wants production, there's no huge benefit. We never really saw them. And man, they were loud. We had one, I sold her, just to give you an idea, she was a really good quality doe. She had quads one year without even blinking. And I sold that one so fast because I was like, I cannot listen to that goat anymore. She was a screamer. So now you have La Mancha's, you have Toggenburg's, which we've never owned Toggenburg's, and then Alpine's, you said, right? So all three?
Yep.
Yeah.
La Mancha's for us, we found were a bit of troublemakers. What have you guys found with La Mancha's? Tell me a bit about that breed.
Okay, thinking of their personality-wise, they're definitely the most crafty.
Yeah.
There's a reason we have a lock on the inside of this door because they play with the lock and they know how to open it. Every lock in our barn is double locked with carabiners and something where they cannot mess with them.
You could probably see it right, but it would be that lock right there. Has a
barely. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say the La Manchas are definitely the most naughty. We've got some that, and I really attribute it to the fact that they don't have ears. They've got some serious ear envy. They go after the other goat's ears. They go after one of our original foundation does, Sadie. She one time got jealous in the show ring and ate the first place goat's ribbon and chewed on the judge's shirt.
I thought you were going to say she ate her ear, so I guess the ribbon's not as bad.
No. But she's got major ear envy, that one.
What are the pros of the La Mancha?
Well, the La Manchas, in our case, they might be crafty, but they are super personable.
Yep.
I would say they're probably one of our most personable breeds. Ease of milk, just because they're the large dairy goat. And if you get into the right bloodline, they've got great capacity to be good producers. Our bloodline of La Manchas are it's more sleek, but there are different builds. So you get more stocky, muscular ones. And then we call them the supermodel ones that are just longer and leaner. But they are, we don't have health problems with them. They're really healthy. And even when it comes to like parasites, I would say.
Yeah, they're the easiest.
Our La Manchas are pretty parasite strong. They've got a good health immune system.
Plus they look like E.T. And and you get a lot of questions. You definitely get a what'd you do to their ears question.
Right, like we did not cut them off.
So they're just almost unique.
They're unique in their look. You either love the look or you don't.
Yeah.
We are one of our favorite goats, and she was so naughty, and she was so much trouble, and every video I ever made on YouTube, like, my goat escaped was about her Lido. She was a La Mancha, and man, she was a handful. But you do, that's the plus side, is they do have personality. I got four sheep out right now, and I could tell you only one of them apart from the rest of them. They're kind of all like just a white blob, but you do get with the goats the personality for sure. I've never had Alpines. We did have an Alpine cross, like a mini Alpine cross.
Yeah.
Never had Alpines and never had Toggenbergs. Tell me a little bit about both those breeds. Why'd you guys pick those? What are the good things about the Alpines and the Togs?
Yeah. So I went with the Alpines a lot because I love the amount of color that they come in. So you can get an Alpine in all shapes and colors of variations. So I really like that. But for production reasons, I found that they're, from doing my research, I found that their milk is heavier in the butterfat content. And I liked that for feeding a growing family of boys. And at the time, we didn't have our little girl yet. So I really wanted some rich milk. And we didn't know at the time that we were going to get into making things with our milk. But it really turns out a nice bar of soap, a nice bottle of lotion. So I really like the creaminess of the Alpine's milk. And I find that they produce the most amount of milk for a smaller percentage of grain.
We have one Alpine that'll almost give us a gallon a day.
Yeah, right? Our Alpines are all up in that. Charlotte gives a gallon a day. Rainy's right up there with close to 3/4 of a gallon a day. Moo, we named her because she looks like a Holstein cow. But she produces like a cow too. So it's pretty, they're pretty impressive.
Yeah. That's some pretty good statistics coming out of those Alpines. And they're not, when I think about every Alpine I ever saw, they're not a very large animal, right? They're all
That's where I was going to go with the Alpine. They'll produce, but they're only 100 pounds, maybe 110.
Well, I would say our La Manchas are probably the smallest breed we have, and they range between 100 and Lucy's pushing 130. But like I said, most of our La Manchas are actually like the supermodel body type. Lucy is the broader muscular body type, so that's why she's pushing more in the 130 range, where the Alpines are more solidly in that 125 to 135 range.
And then when you get to the Togs, you're pushing 140, 150.
Amy's 180 pounds.
And 180 on Amy.
Yeah.
Kay really wanted to get some Toggenbergs, and we almost found a line that we almost wound up getting, and it never happened. What is unique and different about this kind of goat?
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
The Tog?
I got them for the look, and they're not very common in Connecticut. Yeah. So they did real well in the show ring.
Plus it was a business decision because I turn everything into a business decision.
I like that.
I was like, don't get rid of it. At one point we thought about going to just La Manchas and Alpines. And I said, no, you got people from states away calling us for togs because we're one of
people travel from Maine.
We're almost one of the biggest tog breeders out this way. I mean, people call us from all over the place.
Yeah, I don't
from
know
Maine,
why.
From Maine, Vermont, yeah. New Hampshire, up and down, because they're looking for purebred togs.
Yeah, we do have really good show lines too. I think that helps. I really wanted to get into them just because I love the look of the brown with the white. They always look the same. You don't get anything unique or different with them, but I just loved that look.
But I would say they're stubborn. Go back to the personality. I mean, you're talking about 160, 180 pounds. They step on your foot. They want to jump off the stand to the left, and you want them to go to the right. You're not going to win. Like, they are stubborn.
I'll win.
Like, even the younger kids, our 11-year-old, like, he won't take the Toggenburg off the stand.
They're big and powerful.
He's, you know, kind of, I don't want to say afraid, but he knows he can't handle it.
He's respecting him.
Yeah, one of the things in the show ring that when you're coaching the kids how to show your goat the correct way, the rule is don't ever let go of your goat in the show ring. That goat starts pulling you, you don't let go. You handle your goat, right? You show that you can manage that goat. Well, that happened in the Toggenburg class.
Yep.
And our oldest son was showing one of the big togs. He held onto that collar, and she just dragged him, and he's in show white.
Yeah, he's on the ground holding on,
and she's just
dragging him
all
around
the
ring.
Way around the ring.
He just proud parents.
And then
we're like, that's
really yelling from the sidelines. We're like, let go of your goat!
It was hashtag chaos.
They're big. Big goats. You have to be ready for a large goat. But I have to say, and I don't know if it's because all of our togs, they're all sisters or mother daughters. They're all related to each other. So I don't know if it's a family line thing, but they're super loyal.
Oh yeah.
It might take you a while to win them over because we do dam race, but they, for some reason, we dam race all of our kids. For some reason, no matter how much time you spend with the baby Toggenbergs, they're always going to be shy until they hit about a year old.
Yep.
And something at a year old switches, and now they're yours.
Yeah.
They don't, you know, I don't know if that's a family trait, but that's been our experience with Toggenbergs.
You know, I've never spoke with somebody who is a homesteader who did shows. And not that, I mean, there's people out there doing it for sure. But it's something that, like, I'd love to ask you guys a few questions about. What got you into doing shows in the first place, and how does it work with homesteading?
So we got into shows because we started our kids in 4-H.
Yep.
It was all really about the kids learning the proper ways of handling your animal and making sure that animal is breed worthy. So we strongly believe that not every animal should be bred. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Right.
We breed with purpose, and it's not always to just provide for the family. It's to make sure that those goats are in line with what the American Dairy Goat Association likes to have for their standards of their breeds. So that's why we show. It also helps in finding homes for the babies because people come from all around to find quality animals that they know are going to produce milk. The last thing you want to do is get a goat and put all this hay, all this money, all this grain into this goat, all this time into this goat, and have it drop its first set of babies and find out it's giving you 2 cups of milk a day.
Yeah.
And that's just not going to be cost effective. So you want to put all that food into your goat and get a return. And that's going to come with good genetics and good breeding. So that's why we show. I want the kids to have a sense of responsibility as well. And they are 100% in charge of their animal for the whole weekend while they're at the show.
It also became we've struggled with the word homesteader or farmer.
Yeah.
Like, we've bounced back and forth. Because we named the company Simon Says Farms. We didn't really use the word homesteading or homesteader a lot because we almost at one point, or kind of still, we bounce around like we didn't feel like we were.
We have an identity crisis.
We have an identity crisis.
Oh,
we're
no.
Like, wait a second, we still shop at Walmart. can I really call myself a homesteader? and we do shows and we drink margaritas
out of wonton containers.
So it was like,
we classy.
And then actually I found you on YouTube. I found some other homesteaders, you know, doing this YouTube thing. And I'm like, wait a second, you know, not every homesteader looks like that cliche.
I think we had a preconceived idea as to what a homesteader looked like.
Right.
And I was like, we don't fit that mold. And then you went to a conference and met another homesteader.
Right.
And he goes, yes, you do.
He goes, you got to stop using it.
He goes, you totally fit. Because there is no. It could be you. It could be me.
Yeah.
It could be the food. It's how you're living, not what you look like.
But to your point, we're homesteading, but we also did shows. And I think it was more of a, as somebody that homesteads or lives on a farm, you don't take vacations. You really don't go anywhere, right? It's very difficult with all the animals. So when we talked about doing the 4-H, doing the shows, buying a camper, turning it into a family affair, that's kind of why we got into it. And back to the business side, it's big advertising. Every fair you go to, you're advertising your farm. And, you know, people are stopping by, and especially every fair, we probably picked up a Toggenburg customer because they couldn't find togs. We're the only togs there half the time, you know. So
I love what you guys said about that identity crisis. I think a lot of people take that word homesteader. We joke about it a lot on our channel, the ye old timey homesteader. If you're a homesteader, you better be growing all your animals and all your animals' feed and all your feed and harvesting from the river your water and you know, pooping in a bucket. And I think that's, I just think that's crazy.
And off the grid. And,
We get emails from time to time from like different, this sounds like braggy, but it's not, because it's like, it happens like spammy, from producers trying to put together TV shows. And they email you as a homestead on YouTube. Like, they just send hundreds of these out. And they say, hey, we're making a show about people living off the grid, and we want to know if you're interested in being a part of it. And we're like, we're not off the grid. Just because we call ourselves homesteaders doesn't mean we're like out in the boonies somewhere.
Right.
We're just growing from our homes. We're just turning our homes from a thing of consumption, which is what most people, I feel, in the modern day, their homes are consumption, right? Their homes eat up their money, eat up their time, eat up their energy. And we're trying to change that, and we're trying to produce. And whether that be produce, we talk about it a lot, a modern homestead. But even if you actually look at the homesteaders back in the 1800s, where this all started, the homesteading movement, sure, they were growing their own food, but they were all entrepreneurs. We read our kids, I don't know if you ever read your kids' The Little House on the Prairie series. Pa Ingalls is always trying to make a buck. He's always doing something different, trying to make a buck, because producing from your land is food, it's energy, and it's money. And you guys right now, you're doing a big push. You're changing from just producing animals. You're actually producing a lot of products. Why don't you guys tell us a little bit about some of those products that you're starting to generate from your farm?
So that started back in 2013. I had a very large habanero pepper crop. And I like spicy food, but you can only eat so many habanero peppers. And before we went live, we talked about the original shirt I was wearing. It was a Gary Vee shirt, and I'm a big fan. I followed him a lot. And there was that legacy over currency, like create your own story, you know, do what you love to do kind of mantra. And I was like, you know what? I'm a big food guy. I did like 13 years in the restaurant business. And I was like, let's make a barbecue sauce. So I made a barbecue sauce from scratch, my kid's birthday party. Make a long story short, I spent the money to figure out how to take my habanero peppers and turn it into a commercial product that's now sold in about 130 grocery stores between Connecticut and Mass. It's sold on our website. It's made in a commercial kitchen in New Haven. So we don't make it here on the property. We can't.
The habaneros do still come from our garden.
The habanero peppers still come from here. So that was like our first step in taking something off the property and not just converting it into our own food, but into food we can provide for others.
Right.
And that's kind of how that original product started. And then you started with the milk and the lotion.
Right. So we got to a point where we couldn't keep up with our consumption of milk. There's only so much cheese we could make and consume before it went bad. Our son is great at drinking milk, but you know, we actually have four children now. And even so, with Charlotte making a gallon a day, plus the other girls, we just couldn't keep up.
Right.
So we started freezing it and coming up with ways, like, what can we turn it into? And I'm a huge lotion fan. I've always loved, like, Bed Bath & Beyond, or Bath & Body Works. Their lotions and their fragrances. So I read into how to make my own lotion and found that goat milk in for your skin is amazing. So I just started making it for myself. We had a chick business where we would breed out chicks, and every weekend some customers would come to the house, pick up their chicks, and we would just have a couple bottles there for the people to test. And our friends and family tried it, and they're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Then we went live on YouTube in our goat barn, and our villagers were like, well, what do you guys do? Like, we did the swanky sauce, and I was like, well, I make lotion, but not on a big scale. And they were really the push for us to go big scale. So now we do, we've got about 40 different fragrances of lotion. We just branched out into lip balm, and now we're branching out into goat milk soap.
Yeah. So then it just, that's how the business, since 2013. Yeah. And then as the audience grows, the sales grow is really right. What it is. And it's not QVC. It's not like we're selling our product every
Here's
day.
Here's your
online.
Chance. Bring out that swanky sauce.
Right.
I think too, where the value is for our product is not just because they're quality. I mean, we're a little biased. We love our stuff. It's quality ingredients. It's all the labels are clean. You can, our 10-year-old, well, now 11, year old can pronounce every ingredient on all of our products. But it's also, you can watch them live. You know exactly the time and the love and the energy that goes into these animals. And that's the milk that's going into all these products. And I think that's a unique, a unique feature to our specific products is you can watch the babies be born. We're very educational. We try not to censor anything.
We try not to sugarcoat anything.
Life on the farm, you got to be able to take the bad with the good, you know, and we've had some of our worst days on this farm recorded live for YouTube to see, because we don't want people getting into having goats or any kind of animal and not realizing how hard it can really be some days.
Right.
We've had our hay barn blow to pieces live as we're trying to save thousands of dollars worth of hay. We've had, you know, trouble, complicated deliveries for one of our goats this past year. And we lost one of the triplets live on YouTube. And, you know, our community is fantastic because it's unique in a way where they're here for us too.
Oh yeah.
Emotionally.
Yes.
But like I said, you can see the time and the effort that goes into that one bottle of lotion that you're using. So I think that's pretty unique.
Plus, from, you said it earlier, all the homesteaders were entrepreneurs. From the entrepreneur side, the community was here the day I announced I got laid off during COVID, lost my day job, and was like, you know what? Now's the time to make this all full time. YouTube, you know, all the products, the website got a whole, we rebuilt the whole website in less than 30 days, launched two brand new products. So now this is our full time thing. And it's
hashtag full time farmers.
hashtag full time farmers, right.
Yeah, we got called fake farmers one time. So
we did. Yeah, that was funny. Yep.
I don't know why they called us fake farmers, but it stuck. And so now we, constantly, like when something goes wrong in the barn, we're like, that's because we fake farmers. Yeah.
That's a good shirt idea. I like that. Just embrace it, right? I'm shocked you got a negative comment on YouTube, but at the same time,
aren't you just shocked?
That never happened.
Never happened.
What would your advice be to those people if they want to go down a similar path you guys did of starting the homestead, getting into some dairy animals, and maybe even running a bit of a side hustle with that? Give them a little advice. There's life after COVID. Where should they get started? Where does this journey start for them?
I would say first, you got to figure out what you would do if you could do whatever you wanted. Like whether money related, it has nothing to do with money, right? Like
what are you passionate about?
I had people in my corporate job when I was making the barbecue sauce, the word got around, right? Big corporate, huge company. Hey, I heard you make barbecue sauce. Yeah. Does it make you any money? I'm like, that's not why I do it. I do it because when my cousin, my brother calls me and says, hey, Brian was so excited. He saw his last name on a bottle in the grocery store. Yeah. Like that legacy is why it was done, right? It was exciting. It was fun. Yeah, of course, make money is a great idea. But if you can find what you're passionate about, do that. Learn it, get passionate about it, and then figure out later how to turn it into something you can get paid for or paid to do without becoming QVC, right? Because that's you're gonna stress yourself out if you're just trying to sell all day long.
Yeah,
you're gonna. I sold my whole life. After a while, you just not want
to
do that.
We've always taught our kids, you know, I don't care if you grow up to be a doctor, a lawyer, you know, all the things that parents, you know, want their kids to be. I want you to find something that you're passionate about and do it, because then you'll never work a day in your life.
Right.
I don't wake up in the morning. I'm like, oh, I gotta go milk goat. I love what I do. So if somebody, even if it's not homesteading, just find something that you're passionate about doing and research everything that you need to know to be successful in that, because then you'll succeed because you're doing what you're passionate about.
For those people who are watching this later on, where can they find you guys? I do have links in the description already, so tell us a little bit about those who are watching live and then those who will see this in a week or so. Where can they find you? Where can they find your products? Go ahead, plug away. This is your QVC moment.
This is our QVC moment.
So we actually made it real simple. We turned it all into one website, which is simonsaysfarms.com, and it's spelled S-Y-M-A-N. And you could also get there if you spell it wrong, too, probably. But that's it. That's the only place you have to go. Once you go there, you'll find everything.
If you want to check out their live goat cam, it's one of the coolest things on the internet. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can just click on the video. If you're listening to the podcast, there'll be a link in the description below. Also a link to their website. If this interview, if you loved it, if you wished, man, I wish this was like twice as long and covered twice as much info, that wish can be granted. Our Pioneer versions of our episodes are twice as long. This one is an hour and 20 minutes. Aaron and Liz dove deep into the topic of running the business side of things.
That loophole. And then I become the owner of that product, right? I own the brand. I own the recipe.
They also talked a lot about growing their YouTube channel and their community through YouTube and shared some advice there.
Well, people ask us, what do you grow on your farm? And my answer is a community.
Yeah.
That's right. And they go, what do you mean?
Ooh, that's good. I like that.
I go, we farm on YouTube. Like,
they gave additional advice on buying goats and getting started with a goat herd. I know you're going to love that interview. If you're watching on YouTube, click right here, the box that pops up. You can become a Pioneer for $5 a month. Or if you're listening to the podcast, click the link in the description below and become a Pioneer. You'll get instant access to the extended version of this episode and the entire library of all our episodes. And you can join us live for these interviews and ask questions of the guest.